no! We suck again!
The 26th head football coach of this great institution. Ladies and gentlemen, our new head football coach, Mel Tucker.
Our team, we will be physical.
Wilkins again gives to Benjamin. Hit and dropped in the backfield. Mustafa Johnson shooting through for Colorado.
Sometimes you just know. And I know that the young men in that room, they're hungry.
An interception thrown by Martinez. It's picked off by guess who? Nate Landman.
I've never been in a game, as a player or a coach, that we weren't expected to win.
Blitz from Nebraska. Montez takes a shot. Drops it in to Chenault. Touchdown!
Welcome into episode 10 of the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast, titled "Oh No, We Suck Again." and another big blowout loss for the Buffs that we'll get to here in just a bit. As always, if you want to send any questions in, send them over to shouldertoshoulderpod@gmail.com. So let's get into the Pac-12 weekly recap and start it off. UCLA kind of dominated Stanford 34-16, and I'm going to kind of let Chase take the lead on most of these. I was out on vacation this past weekend, so I didn't get to see too many games. So Chase, what kind of happened here?
So this was just pretty much Jack West is the Stanford third string quarterback, and he was bad. I mean, straight up. I don't think there's any other way to explain what happened. He was just not good at all. And UCLA, they leaned on their running back, Joshua Kelly. He pretty much tore up Stanford all game long on the ground, and they just kind of rode that to a win. I mean, I know the announcers, the broadcast crew at one point were saying, like, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the UCLA quarterback, is putting on a clinic for UCLA, but he really wasn't even that good. I mean, he threw a pretty atrocious pick at one point. I think he had under 200 yards passing. So I think it really was just a case of both of these teams aren't very good. One was just worse because they had their third-string quarterback. So naturally, UCLA was able to win that game. I think it's a different game if they've got their second stringer, Davis Mills, right? Is their second string quarterback?
Yeah, Davis Mills.
If he was in there, I think it's an entirely different game. Jack West was so bad. I can't even, I mean, he just, he couldn't complete a pass hardly. So, yeah.
Well, I did watch like the very like last quarter of this game, and I at one point saw him. He just like tried to throw a swing pass out to his running back, and it looked like you could like see him thinking about it as he released the ball, and he just grounded it about 6 yards short of the guy.
Yeah, I'm sure Stanford going into that game, I'm sure they knew they were going to lose that game. I mean, there's no way that they could have watched that guy play quarterback and practice all week and not thought like, oh, we're screwed.
So we're screwed.
Yeah, and they kind of came out and played like it, to be completely honest. I mean, that's what it looked like. So,
yep. So that one, and I don't think that makes me, that makes me worried about UCLA anymore. I think that they just played a Stanford team that was kind of down with injuries and didn't really want to be there. So they took them down pretty easily. But like you said, DTR is pretty average. So
yeah.
I'm not too worried about them being better or anything like that.
No, I think all it did was show me that there are two bad teams, you know, and one of them was down to their third string quarterback, and that was the difference, pretty much. I mean, you know, UCLA, for as much as they did dominate this game, they had some good and some bad, some like pretty terrible moments still too. I mean, they're still not, I mean, maybe they're putting it together a little bit better because their offense did put up points. I mean, they still had to beat the Stanford defense, but I still don't think they're anything special.
That'll be an interesting one in a couple weeks when we go to play them. But the next game, this was probably the most surprising game that I think somehow I will see in the entire season for the Pac-12 this year, is Oregon State beat Cal.
Yeah, so this one was interesting. Oregon State, actually, they went up pretty early. I think they were leading 14-3, maybe at half. But they were honestly dominating Cal for the most part. The offense, it's kind of the same issues that Cal has had recently, ever since Chase Garbers went out. Modster just is not a very good quarterback. I mean, there's no other way to say it. Like, he just, when they have him under, when they have him at quarterback, they're just not, the offense is just not very good. I mean, it's not very dynamic. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Oregon State was up, 14-3 at half. And then somehow second half, Cal put together a couple of really good drives, went up 17-14 before Oregon State could kind of come back and win it in the end. But it was definitely still just a case of Cal's offense holding them back. Their defense can only keep people off the board for so long, you know, when they're going three and out on offense all the time.
Yeah, I mean, giving up 21 points isn't terrible. And Oregon State, I think their one saving grace is their offense is pretty decent. Yeah. They've got some athletes. So I guess when you are going three and out on offense all the time, it's going to get your defense tired. So that was interesting to see. I just remember scrolling through the scores on my phone, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, Oregon State, wait, what?
Yeah, I know. It seems weird that they're winning, but it's how, I mean, it kind of worked out. I mean, honestly, if looking at the way the teams have played recently, it's not that shocking. I think Cal is going to have a lot of these games for the rest of the year that are relatively low scoring because their defense will kind of keep them in it, but I just don't think they're going to be able to put up points.
Well, so that, yeah, like I said, that was an interesting one to see. And then this one I got to watch most of, Oregon, Washington. And for the first time, well, not the first time, but Herbert didn't look like the best quarterback on the field, actually. I think Eason, for once, really like lived up to that whole, you know, he could be an NFL quarterback type of billing. And he pretty much, in my opinion, outplayed Herbert almost the entire game. Oregon just ended up winning the game mostly because they just have a better defense, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of them played very well. I mean, their numbers are honestly pretty similar. I think Eason he had a higher average yards per completion. I think, you know, he had 3 touchdowns, Herbert had 4 touchdowns. But at that point, you're kind of just splitting hairs. I think they both were strong. But yeah, it was an interesting one. I mean, Washington honestly looked like they were in control early on. It looked like they might actually just completely blow out Oregon there after the first couple of drives, but they kind of recovered. I think you're right. I think the difference is Oregon's defense was just a little bit better in the end, and once they kind of figured that out, it evened out the playing field a bit. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Two good teams. It's just shocking to me that Washington already had 2 losses coming into this thing to Cal and Stanford. So otherwise, this would have been a seriously big game for the two of them. But, mm-hmm. You know, Oregon keeps rolling. I still think Washington is definitely like the second best team in that side of the conference, without a doubt, even though they're 5-3 now. But they're just inconsistent. So they came to play for this one. They pushed Oregon to the limit, but Oregon still showed they're the best. They came out on top.
Yeah, and I actually saw somewhere Oregon, I mean, obviously there's still a lot of games we played, but Oregon, as long as they pretty much play the way they should, they've essentially locked up the north side of the division. Just because, you know, if I'm looking at the standings right now, obviously Washington has, is it 2 or 3 losses in Pac-12 play?
They now have 3 because yep. Stanford, Cal, and Oregon, yes.
Right. Yep. So in the conference, Oregon has got 2-game lead on everybody in the north. And then even if they have games against, I believe, who is it, ASU and USC maybe?
They still have, yes, ASU, USC, Arizona, Washington State, and Oregon State.
Right. So even if they lose like 2 of those games in the south, they're still going to have head-to-head against pretty much everybody in the north. You know, and then the record's going to be, I mean, it's going to be hard for Oregon to, if they were to lose the North, it'd be really impressively bad.
I think the only team that can actually reach them technically is Oregon State, because they're 2-2, and all the rest of the teams in the North are under 500 in conference. So,
who would have thought that?
So unless the Beavs really turn on the gas here and start beating every team they play, and Oregon still would have to lose a couple. So I think they pretty much got it locked up.
Yeah, and that was interesting. And the South's still pretty relatively wide open. USC 3-1, Utah 3-1, and Arizona and ASU and UCLA all at 2-2. So, and I think that's usually how the South is every year. So, CU's probably out of it, unless they're able to really make a miracle comeback. But speaking of the South, Arizona State kind of got dominated by Utah 21-3. Well, I mean, Utah's offense, I don't think, is ever going to score, like, just blow teams out, because I don't think it's that good. But their defense is good enough that if they can hold somebody to, I mean, they can hold Arizona State to 3 points, which I didn't really get to watch this game. Was it Jaden Daniels or what kind of happened?
No, you know, I just think that Utah defense is really, really, really good. I mean, when they come to play, you know, it's tough. And to be honest, the ASU offense, I don't think it for what it's done so far on the year, it's had some good games, but both of the games where they scored the most, one was against us and our defense is terrible. Another one was against Washington State, whose defense has been terrible. So it's kind of one of those things where I just think it was bound to happen at some point here. ASU was going to get slowed down. And when you're looking at these two teams, you know, if they're leaning on their defenses, Utah's is just better. So not much that ASU could do about that. I mean, they really just could not move the ball at all. Their only points came on a field goal that they got after an interception in Utah territory. So even on the drive for the field goal, they went 4 plays and went -4 yards. So, so it didn't go particularly well. Yeah, I mean, Utah was really in control. They even lost. They lost Huntley and Moss, their quarterback and running back, at some point during this game, and they were still able to hold on. So,
were they bad injuries?
I'm honestly not 100% sure. They haven't really. I don't know if they've released any information at this point yet. But you kind of never know with those guys. They both kind of have injury histories, so we will see what happens. But I did see some stuff about the Utah backup quarterback. I guess he's a very solid backup, so I think they're feeling okay.
Is it Shelley? Because I thought I saw somewhere he's not actually the second string anymore.
I think it is Shelley. I'm pretty sure. Okay. I think he... they were... Shelley and who's the other guy? Drew Lisk. They both had snaps towards the end of this game.
They both took
so
okay.
I'm not exactly sure. They might not even know who they're going with, but yeah.
Oh yeah, they only threw 5 combined passes. Yeah. But
I mean, you know, Utah can win some games playing like that. I'm not sure how they look in the backup running back situation, but yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you hope that the guys that got hurt at the end of that game are still in. It'd be great if Zach Moss and Tyler Huntley could be good to go, but I'm not entirely sure at this point.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see. I mean, Shelley was the same guy that pretty much got Utah to the Pac-12 championship last year. He kind of kept that offense somewhat humming. Right. And so, I mean, if he is the guy that goes in, he's pretty capable. And if someone beats him out, I would assume it's because he's pretty solid, because Shelley looked pretty good last year. So we'll see who they have when they go into next week. And then last game, which was, this was not fun to see when we're playing them next week, was USC just kind of dicked up Arizona 41-14.
Yeah. You know, it was the Khalil Tate is not in Colorado anymore tour yet again. He was bad, honestly. He did not look good at all, to the point where they put in Grant Gunnell, his backup. And, you know, they weren't totally 100% out of it at that point, I don't think. So I don't know if you could really say that they benched Tate, but they were down by a bit. So, yeah, it was ugly for them. USC, Keaton Slovis continues to look like a very solid quarterback. he might honestly be better than Jaden Daniels. He looks more dynamic, in my opinion. So that'll be interesting to see how they deal with that. But the one thing I will say about USC, the injuries are kind of mounting for this team. They were going with their fourth string running back, and they still managed to succeed. So they've got injuries all over the field. But yeah, U of A just really couldn't keep up with them. They got down early, and it was over pretty quick.
Yeah, I saw somewhere that USC's leading tackler, he was their safety, went out in this game. They already had all three of their starting corners out. Both of their starting defensive ends are out. And then, like you said, yeah, the running backs kind of went down too. They lost three of them. So the problem with this is that's not what I was really worried about for them coming into this game against us. It was their receivers, so...
Right, yeah, exactly. As long as that three-headed monster that they have at receivers healthy, they're in good shape. I mean, like I said, Keaton Slovis looks good, so they'll be able to put up points with those guys. And the defense still seems to be keeping it together, even though they're missing a lot of talent. I mean, I think USC is just, it's a factory over there, man.
Yeah, it really
is. It's a talent factory over there. And every time a guy goes down, they just replace him with some other guy who was super highly ranked from before. So it doesn't seem to affect them too much.
Nope. And yeah, I'm kind of curious. I wonder, I mean, right now they're sitting at, you know, 6-1 over, or not 6-1, 4-3, sorry. But those three losses, I mean, they're competitive, I think, in all three. I wonder if the new AD is just kind of, he just kind of wants to get rid of, whenever they get a new AD, kind of wants to get rid of Helton and just start from scratch, or if he kind of is going to base it on how the season ends. That'll be interesting to see going forward.
Yeah, I it's so weird because it seems like the writing was on the wall already that he's getting fired, but they're having an okay year. I don't know if, I mean, I guess USC standards are higher than that, especially with the talent that they have on the roster, but, you know, I think a lot of people anticipated them just totally bottoming out this year, especially after their starting quarterback got hurt, and they just thought, all right, that's it, Clay Helton's done. But, you know, I mean, their last few games, they were right there with Notre Dame. They only lost by 3 away from home, and they dominated Arizona. So it'll be interesting to see how they finish the year for sure.
Yeah, and I want to keep an eye on that. I think the big thing is how the fans react, and I still think most of the fans kind of hate Helton. Oh, for so sure. Yeah, that's never definitely really a recipe definitely for success.
Yeah.
So that kind of wraps it up for the Pac-12 this past week. Now we'll kind of get into the disaster that happened up in Pullman, Washington. Buffs lost 41-10. Offense again looked completely inept, and I think a lot of it again goes on Montez.
Dude, I mean, it was so infuriating to watch him in this game. And look, the last game, okay, you're playing Oregon, their defense is very good, we know that. So he had a lot of tipped passes that ended up getting picked. I mean, there was some unfortunate stuff that caused that thing to snowball out of control. He was just bad from the get-go. I mean, you could even see the announcers, the crew, they were saying, I think his first two passes, they were like, and you can see Montez is just not really on top of his game right now, where, like, I think LaVisca had to jump, like, get every inch of his vertical and stretch and catch one on the sideline, and he was, you know, underthrowing guys. He didn't look comfortable at all, so you kind of knew from the start it was going to be bad.
Yeah, and one of those announcers was Kelly Stauffer, an old CSU quarterback, so he kind of chugs dong, but he actually, for once, some of the stuff he was saying was pretty spot on. I mean, it was, I remember he called the CU-CSU game at the beginning of the year, and he was kind of getting on Montez for the same stuff, you know, throwing off his back foot, poor lazy mechanics. And it's just, I know it shouldn't surprise me at this point, but it still blows my mind that a fifth-year senior just, at this point, he just obviously doesn't care enough to work on it. That's got to be it.
I don't know if I would go that far. I think to say that he doesn't care is a lot, but he's definitely in his head a lot right now. I mean, he was bad, obviously, in the game of football, just playing football, he was not good. But also, I mean, they had a moment towards, I don't know if it was, I think it was the third quarter, they had a drive where they didn't convert on third and like extremely long, and then they pan over to him and he was shoving one of the Washington State defensive linemen. Yep. And I guess he was like talking shit to some of the fans, the Washington State fans. And it just seems like he's in the last two games, man, he seems like he's like regressing to going back to what his issues were before. And I don't know what's going on with that. I think, you know, obviously he's a college guy. He's not, you know, we're not talking about full-grown adults necessarily. So obviously, like, when he struggles, it's going to be harder to get it going, but that's kind of your job. Like, you're the starting quarterback of a Division I football team in a Power 5 conference. You need to be able to mentally handle it at the very least. And he's really, really struggling with that right now, without a doubt. So,
yeah, I think, I think you're right. I think to say he doesn't care is a little strong. I guess it's just, I think he's just like, he probably works on it in practice. And then the minute he feels pressure, he just kind of goes back to that old Montez that doesn't have solid mechanics and throws off of his back foot. But
100%.
Yeah. His mental game, as far as keeping his composure, kind of seems to just have disappeared the last couple games. I know he's gotten into jawing matches with some people before in the past, but yeah, he straight up just pushed that guy, and I don't know how they didn't flag him for it. I think maybe the refs felt bad because we were just getting dominated again, but no. He should have gotten flagged. And I saw some people on Twitter like after, because for those of you that didn't stay in to watch the end of the game, he did get benched eventually. Lytle came in, got hurt on, was it his first play or maybe his second play when he...
It was his first, I think it was his first pass. Okay. I think it was the second play of the game, or his second play of the game,
yep.
I'm pretty sure.
So Lytle got hurt, and then Blake Stenstrom came in, and the first pass he threw a pick. I saw some people tweeting like, oh, good thing we benched Montez, and that just kind of pissed me off. I mean, we had to at least see kind of what we have.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think for the most part, everyone was just saying, you know, what he's doing right now, what Montez is doing is not, I mean, it's totally detrimental to what's going on. I mean, we were crushing them running the ball in that game, and all we needed was a guy who could essentially manage it. That's all we needed for Montez. We didn't need crazy break out of the pocket, sling it down the field on the run for 60 yards, Montez. We just needed like a guy who will convert a 6-yard slant, you know? I mean, like, that was pretty much it. That was all we were asking, is like, let him run the ball and then complete a couple of passes and keep the ball rolling. But he wasn't doing that at all, really. He looked pretty lost. He was throwing off of his back foot a lot. And yeah, I mean, his numbers were 129 yards, no touchdowns, and two picks. So we've got to try something else. And I think for fans, it probably just helps to see what else they have going on. That said, going forward, you still got to go Montez for all the games. And you just have to hope that he gets out of this mental funk that he's in. I didn't see anything from Stenstrom that said to me he gives him a better chance. And Lytle, you know, we don't know. I don't know what his injury is at this point, but they were both supposedly pretty close together. So I think it's just really a matter of the coaching staff felt like they didn't have anything in the two backups. So I think that's kind of what we were seeing, why it took so long for them to replace Montez in the first place.
Yeah. See, I agree with them sticking with Montez, but I think now you definitely have to make sure that if Lytle's healthy, he can at least get some time in, because if we're being brutally honest, bowl game's pretty much out the window at this point. I mean, coming up the schedule, we've still got who do we got left? We got UCLA and USC.
UCLA, Stanford, and then Washington and Utah.
Yeah, so I mean, right now the only game I think that CU it should be a toss up is the Stanford CU game. And then,
right.
And that's if Davis Mills isn't back. Yeah. And then maybe UCLA. So, I mean, that's two toss-up games. I don't know if, you know, mentally they can put it together for those two games. And then at that point, you'd have to upset somebody else. So,
right.
I think at this point, you got to start looking towards, okay, we got, even though I don't think that Lytle or Stenstrom is going to be starting next year, if they do, we're probably in a shitload of trouble. But So I don't think the starting quarterback is even on the roster right now, but you know, injuries happen. So you got to get whichever one you think is going to be the backup going forward some reps, because if he comes in next year, we're screwed because they still have not really any game experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty much what we're seeing right now, is that they don't feel like they're going to have either of those guys starting going forward. You're right. I mean, you want your backup to have some experience. It's just, yeah, I think they're still, you know, they're still going to roll Montez out there. They're going to try to win as many games as they can and hope that he gets right. And if he doesn't, yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. You try to get Lytle in there. I mean, Stenstrom's a little younger, so maybe they focus on him. Maybe they think he has more potential to figure things out. I don't know, but it would be good for the guys just for next year to get it going, which it's sad that that's what we're talking about, is we're already kind of moving on to next year and thinking about how next year is going to go. But that's kind of what it's come down to now. After these last two games, you know, Oregon was one thing, but getting destroyed like this by Washington State was a tough one, I think, for everyone.
I think the most difficult thing for me is, I expected Washington State to put up points in our defense. But at one point, I think you had tweeted it out, Washington State scored on the first three drives, and then the CU defense actually held them to 3 points in five drives.
Right.
And in those five drives, our offense did nothing.
Yeah, I think it was at least one pick in there, a missed field goal. That's another thing we have to address about this game. The play calling, I honestly didn't understand it. I don't know what's going on. Jay Johnson, that guy seems to overthink every time he gets into the red zone. It's like he just makes it more complicated. I don't know why. It just seems like every time we get in the red zone, they go away from whatever was working and try to do something different. Like, he has some red zone package, I'm sure, and it's not working, and it's getting really frustrating. It's frustrating to me that they're settling for field goals. I mean, it's fourth down and three. It's your first drive. It's 38 degrees, raining, and at least 10-mile-an-hour winds outside, and you're going to ask Stefano to kick a 48-yard field goal, Mel?
it's just a terrible goal.
I don't know why they decided to do that. I mean, it's like, you're fourth down and three. I thought, oh, maybe they don't want to use Visca out of the Wildcat still. But then they did it later in the game. I'm like, that's a perfect Visca Wildcat opportunity. You're in their territory. You know your defense can't stop shit. So why not just, you got to try to get a touchdown on that first drive. I mean, we take the ball after the coin flip for a reason. And it's so that our offense can establish some momentum. But they can't do that if you don't give them the opportunity to keep moving the ball downfield. So.
Right.
That was frustrating.
And you're kind of right. Yeah. Johnson definitely deserves some of the blame, not just for the red zone play calling, but at one point, and I don't know if it ended like this, but Fontenot was averaging 9 yards a carry. And I mean, I get that we were down two touchdowns or 17 points or whatever it was, but I mean, that's not out of reach when it's still in the second quarter. You can still run the ball, and it seemed like he just kind of went away from that because we were down by multiple scores, and he started to panic and thinking we needed to throw the ball. But, I mean, we could have run the ball, kept their offense off the field, and actually scored, but we kind of went away from that.
So my thing was, we went into this game knowing that Washington State's run defense was really, really bad. So I don't know why we didn't lean on it more. Fontenot did. He ended with 105 yards on 11 carries. So he averaged 9.5 yards a carry. And Mangum, for what it's worth, had 42 yards on 8 carries. So he was averaging over 5. I mean, they were running the ball all over him with both guys. But they kept going away from it. And, you know, I don't have a problem with our offense taking a shot downfield here and there. I mean, there was one where Montez kind of overthrew LaVisca, but LaVisca also kind of didn't get to the ball. It was like some weird thing happened and it was incomplete in the end zone, but he was totally open. Mm-hmm. He had like 3 steps on this guy. So like, I'm fine with you taking shots downfield, but there's a point in here where I just really was getting frustrated with settling for field goals every single drive. They had one where I just felt like, why are you not playing for four downs at this point? I mean, you're down 14-3. This drive, for example, they were down 14-3. They get into the red zone. It's 1st and 10, and they go Steven Montez pass, 3 yards. Steven Montez incomplete, Steven Montez incomplete, and then they're 4th and goal at the 7, so they kick a 24-yard field goal. Which for me is like, you're running it all over them. Why not just run the ball 3 times? I mean, okay, fine, you give Montez 1 pass, whatever. But I think that's my biggest thing with Johnson is it seems like he has a game plan going in, but he refuses to adjust to what is being given to him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what's most frustrating for me. We talked about it before, you know, that slant to Demetri Stanley was open all game long in the Arizona game, and they weren't going to it. And in this one, you know, they're letting us run on them. I know you're right, we got down early, but they were doing it the whole game, and I felt like we just weren't using it as much as we could have. I mean, we could have given Fontenot and Mangum, like, at least 30-something carries between the two of them, you know? And right. I feel like that would have been a better game plan.
To be fair to Jay Johnson, I guess I'm willing to give him a pass on the year to see what he gets when he gets a dual threat quarterback, which it seems like he's kind of a fan of. Sure. And when your quarterback isn't just, I don't know if mentally checked out is the word I want to use, but just like not mentally coming into mentally, these games.
Mentally broken?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I mean, I want to see what, like, when you can trust him to actually make simple plays. I mean, people that were actually at the game said that he was missing guys that were wide open all the time. And that's just, I mean, he's kind of, I guess, a one read quarterback, really. He looks at his first read, and if he doesn't have it, he kind of panics. And that's, I think, where the poor mechanics come in. But he's missing guys that are wide open on easy throws too, not just downfield, but slants and little outs. So, I mean, he's not helping Jay Johnson at all, but you can also take Montez out of the equation by just handing the ball off in the red zone, like you said. So
right.
It's, I think both Montez and Johnson have to shoulder a lot of the blame for this one. And yeah, the defense gave up 41, but I don't know if they give up 41 if the offense isn't going out and going 3 and out every, you know, every other drive. That makes your defense tired.
And giving them short fields too. I mean, that's the thing about the interceptions is Montez's first interception was deep in Colorado territory. So we're probably not down 14-0 within 4 minutes or whatever it was, 5 minutes, if they just can run the ball a little bit more consistently. I mean, it was shocking to me, second play of the game for the offense, that Montez threw a pick, and it was a bad one too. I mean, it was like a crossbody throw that he just floated up there. So look, the offense is definitely a point of frustration right now, and that's unfortunate because it was supposed to be a team strength going in, but so much of it depends on how Montez is feeling when he goes out there that, I mean, that's going to decide pretty much every game going forward is how he looks and how Jay Johnson calls plays and whether or not they can capitalize on what the other team is giving them.
Right. And, you know, I mean, this is still the same team that beat a good Arizona State team. Just kind of like you said, it's all dependent on whether Montez is kind of comes ready to play or not. And if he plays like the last two games, we're going to lose the next probably every game that we play. But yeah. I mean, if he comes out and the offense can score, the defense gets a couple stops every game. So, I mean, you know, they've 41 points when you're going against Washington State. I mean, our offense should have been able to put up 42 against that defense, but we made them look like, you know, a top 15 defense in the country somehow.
I mean, I predicted we would win that game like 45-42. That was what I expected. I thought Washington State would put up that many points on us, but 10 points for us was never, I never even considered it.
I did not either. And it's just frustrating that this is the situation we're in where the QB room was not recruited to a level where you're really comfortable putting in your backup guy when your starter is just completely shitting the bed.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're at. And I've mentioned it multiple times before. I really don't think the starting QB for next year is on the roster. It's either got to be Brendan Lewis or a grad transfer because the staff just clearly has zero confidence in Lytle or Stenstrom.
Yeah, definitely seems to be the case. I mean, you know, right now we're just kind of, we're riding with Montez for better or worse for the rest of the year. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see in the years ahead how they do once this staff has their quarterback. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think we kind of have to withhold some judgment for right now for this year. I mean, it is first year for new head coach, new staff, so there's bound to be some issues. It's just frustrating while we're going through it, for sure.
Yep. As far as, I mean, it kind of similar to the Oregon loss, are there any real positives that you have coming out of this game?
We kind of talked about it already, but the running backs look good again. They looked good last week. Fontenot was awesome this week. So that was good to see. Definitely like to see that. But, you know, other than that, I don't know. Defense looked really good for five drives. They looked like they were putting it together. Of course, as soon as we scored, they reverted back to what they were doing before. So, you know, yeah, it was a frustrating game. It was tough. It's tough to find some positives. But I guess what I can take out of it is Fontenot and Mangum still look good. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy we'll still have them for at least another couple of years.
Yeah, and I feel like I've bashed on him a lot throughout the last 4 or 5 weeks. But, I mean, even though Borgie, who's the Washington State running back, kind of just dominated us, I think for the most part, I liked at least how Nate Landman played. I mean, you could tell he really wanted to, you know, be making plays and be in on everything. And he worked his ass off. It's just kind of unfortunate that he didn't get help, one, from his offense, and two, just from the fact that we just don't have, you know, the guys in the backfield and the secondary to kind of help out.
Yeah, that's true. Nate Landman definitely, he played better. I mean, I thought he actually played okay during the Oregon game. He's kind of getting back to what he was before, where, I mean, even for this game, on those five drives where the defense really was stepping up, he was a really integral part of that. I mean, he was making open field tackles. Guys weren't getting past him. And, you know, that's what he does best. He sees the ball carrier, sees the receiver, whoever gets the ball and runs downfield and hits them. And they don't get away very often. So when he can play like that, I feel like the defense definitely has a better chance to succeed. And that's kind of what we were seeing for that wonderful couple of drives for the defense there. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the staff keeps saying they feel like the defense is close, and I guess I can understand why they say that, because they do have drives where they look like they kind of figure things out for a little bit. They step it up and they can shut a team down for a little while, but they just give up. When they're not on it, it looks so bad. It looks so bad so quickly. They just get cut up. Yeah, so it's like everything else, it's frustrating. But, you know, hopefully the staff is right and they actually are getting closer and closer to getting it figured out, because, you know, we're going to need the defense, unfortunately, to be better than what they've been if we want to win some games here.
So that brings me to the defensive staff. Well, I mean, I don't want to say the offensive staff too, because let's face the facts, we don't have the money right now paying off McIntyre's buyout and some of the other coaches from that staff as well to fix both sides of the ball. But I can't imagine that the entire defensive staff is back next year. Or am I crazy to think that?
I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks you give the guys that you have time to get the people that they're recruiting in and kind of get their vision going. I mean, I would imagine no matter what, Mel Tucker, I mean, that guy's constantly evaluating. He's evaluating his players. He's evaluating his coaching staff. He's evaluating himself. So the only way I see changes being made is if he looks at somebody and he really says, even when we get these new guys in, I don't think that they're who I want there going forward. So, personally, I feel like he probably keeps going with what he has. I mean, you know, he wanted Jay Johnson and Tyson Summers for a reason. He worked with those guys. And that, I guess that for me, that's why I feel like, for the most part, it stays. You know, I don't know if that's going to be true down to like the individual position coaches. But I would say at the very least the coordinators for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think the coordinators definitely have to stay. Just kind of, as we had mentioned, we did that recruiting segment. I mean, you know, Brumbaugh, unless, and there's some smoke around the Antonio Alfano guy from Alabama, the former five-star D tackle, but the reason he's leaving Alabama is because his grandma was sick. So I don't know how realistic that is.
All right.
But you know, there's really nothing great so far on the D line coming in. And then same with the defensive backs for, well, really, I mean, obviously Tyson Summers is one of the defensive back coach, but he's a defensive coordinator, so he's not expected to recruit as much as someone like Travis Tillman, but he's not getting much work done either. So I wonder if one of those two guys is going to kind of be shown the door. But again, that's kind of a bold move to send somebody out, I guess, after 1 year.
Right.
But this defense has just kind of been that bad.
Right. Yeah, I think it would have to be, like I said, it would have to be Mel just fundamentally disagreeing with the way that someone was going about their business, pretty much. I think it's just hard as a head coach. You bring these guys in, if you start firing them right away, it's not going to look good.
Mm-mm. Especially when he's a first-time head coach.
Right.
So he doesn't have that, you know, that history to kind of back him up. But
sure.
The thing, I guess, that was really bothersome to me is, you know, we lost bad to Oregon. And you had a couple people like, oh, man, is this going to be just like last year after Oregon State where we just fall apart and lose the next seven? And someone even asked that to Mel Tucker in a press conference. And he said, that's not going to happen. Cool. But then we go out and the wheels kind of stay off. We couldn't find the lug nuts to even put them back on against Washington right. State. So, I mean, you can say it's not going to happen, but I'm kind of in a, like, well, show me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think I was one of the people who said that, I think, last week. I was saying I was scared that that's what they were going to do again. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, look, I guess I'll just go ahead and say I still definitely believe that what Mel Tucker's doing is right. I still think he's the right guy for the job. I just think, you know, with CU, the culture right now is something that doesn't change quick, unfortunately, as much as we really want it to, as much as it kind of seemed like it was. You know, we still had the same quarterback that let his team lose seven straight games last year and kind of played progressively worse as the year went on, it seemed like. So, you know, there's the same pieces are still there. I really hope that they get it figured out. I hope that they do whatever they have to do to get Montez right here coming up. Otherwise, we're going to get blown out by USC again. So and that's not going to look good to have three in a row, completely non-competitive games. So I hope you can turn it around. And you know, if they come out and they play a good game against USC, then I'll be feeling better. It's just they have to pull out of this tailspin that they're in. Otherwise, people are definitely, like you said, just going to be saying, like, okay, same team, you know, different season, same shit, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not. I still think Mel Tucker is the right guy and everything, but that, I mean, I'm not going to be too optimistic if, you know, they do lose the rest of the games going forward and they get blown out multiple times to finish the season. I mean, that's just a bad look, and really good football coaches don't let that happen. So
right.
I mean, he's been dealt the bad injury luck card, but that shouldn't be an excuse to get blown out 41-10 because the injuries aren't happening on the offensive side of the ball. So right. You've got to figure something out. But you know, you kind of mentioned it. The way USC plays and the way we've played, it looks like it could be in line for another blowout.
Right. Yeah. So. I mean, definitely, if they lose every one of these games, that's a 3-9 season. That would be, what, the worst season they've had in, God, I don't know, since, like, beginning of the McIntyre era. So, I would say that can't happen. I mean, even when we were doing our preseason, like, podcast preview of what we wanted going forward, I don't think either one of us said anything less than 5 wins. I mean, we both were like, yeah, if they go 5-7, you know, we could still be happy with that if they play competitive games and stuff. But I mean, if you go 3-9, man, you're going to be definitely on a big time. Like, people are going to be watching you coming into year two. So I hope Mel finds a way to pull him out of this and get a couple more wins, just if nothing else, to make it look better, to keep recruits that are supposed to come here, coming here. You know, I mean, that kind of worries me some too, that if they just absolutely tank the rest of the year, they lose some of these guys that they've got.
Right. That was one of the things I was worried about too. I mean, it's nice to see some of the recruits on Twitter, like Keith Miller and Carson Lee, saying, don't worry, we're going to get this thing going the right direction. So
right.
I'm not too worried about those kind of guys, but, like, you know, if they want any chance at Ashad Clayton, who's a 4-star running back, that it seems like he's got, you know, a good relationship with some of the CU coaches. If they want any chance at him, they can't finish the season on blowouts going 3-9, because no 4-star is going to want to come play for a team that just looks like they have no idea what's going on.
Right. Yeah, exactly. At this point, like, I'm going to need Brendan Lewis, Keith Miller, Carson Lee, all those guys, like, just keep hammering the recruiting. All right. Just keep telling all those guys, don't worry, it's going to get better when we're all there. We're going to make something happen, because we need them to stay.
Yeah, for sure. We definitely do. Otherwise, it could make an already gloomy outcast look even worse. So
yeah, so
that's something to keep an eye on too going forward. And we'll give updates if there's any major recruiting stuff going forward. So let's get into kind of the USC preview. We've talked a little bit about, you know, what's going on with the Buffs. What are some of the things you want to look out for USC?
Well, I think the biggest thing with USC is they have these three guys who play wide receiver who are very, 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 very good, which doesn't set up well for the Buffs, unfortunately. Our secondary isn't exactly equipped to handle 5-star talent at wide receiver. Yeah, and between they've got Pittman, Vaughns, and who's the Amon-Ra St. Brown? Is he the...
Yes.
The last one? Yeah, so those three guys are all incredibly talented, and they've been killing pretty much every team they play. So that worries me quite a bit. But you know, the thing with USC, like we said earlier, they're factory, man. They're just turning out talented players left and right. And like I said, they went to their 4th-string running back in their last game. He had 8 carries for 103 yards and 2 touchdowns. So I don't know any other team that can say, oh yeah, our 4th-stringer went out and absolutely dominated a Division I opponent. So it's going to be a tough one for sure.
Yeah. And yeah, I think the crazy thing about USC's receiving core is that I think that's the only receiving core in the Pac-12 that's more talented than CU's. And the reason is because these guys were all like borderline 4-star or borderline 5-star, if not already 5-star guys. I know Pittman was a 247 5-star. St. Brown, I'm pretty sure, was a 5-star, and then the same thing for Vaughns. I mean, all these guys are just absolutely crazy good. And USC, kind of the way they play is they just kind of throw up a jump ball, and right, these guys just go and get it. And it's intentional almost at this point. I mean, they've done it every single game, and if it's working, why would you try and fix it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when all else fails, just throw it to the freak athlete that's playing downfield. And on this team, they have a choice of 3 different ones. So, yeah, that's going to be tough. Get ready, Buffs fans, to be watching, to be totally afraid every time Keaton Slovis drops back and looks like he's throwing deep, because it could get ugly if they don't get it figured out. I mean, I feel okay with Delrick Abrams back there, but, you know, KJ Trujillo is going to have his work cut out for him next week.
Yeah, I think this is... I mean, he didn't. I know he got beat on I think it was a jump ball last game against Washington State. But again, he didn't look atrocious for being a true freshman that probably wasn't supposed to be playing this year.
Right.
So I mean, I think going forward, again, he'll be someone to keep an eye on. It looks like he could. I mean, he'll obviously, most guys get better as they progress through their college career. I wouldn't be surprised if by his junior year he's playing and he's a guy that people kind of try and shy away from, but this is a game where, again, I think he could really, really, really get targeted. I mean, these guys are just going to I would not be surprised if they're just throwing jump balls to wherever he is almost every other play.
Yeah, that's what I'm anticipating. So we better get ready. I mean, the one thing I will say is USC tends to play to the level of their competition. Obviously, they did just blow out Arizona, but you know, they've had some games earlier in the year where they played down to the level of their opponent. So you never know if you can find a way to hang around. You know, maybe we can take care of business. But yeah, it is unfortunate. I mean, they're playing with a backup quarterback. He has been really solid, and they're playing with a backup running back who was very, very good, and they've got three extremely talented wide receivers. They got backups all over their defense, but it doesn't seem to matter either. So, you know, it'll just be a matter of, can we find some weaknesses to capitalize on and maybe catch USC on an off day in Folsom?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough one to watch. And one of the things that's also a big concern is CU has pretty much a non-existent pass rush.
Right.
And I felt bad watching Mustafa Johnson. You could tell he was clearly in some pain when he was playing. I mean, I think he only played like 20 or so snaps. So I don't know if he's even going to be ready to go for USC. But when he's in, that's pretty much our only pass rush. Besides, I mean, Changham can get some pressure. But when Mustafa's not 100%, it's just there's no push on the defensive line. From a passing perspective, and if you give a guy like Slovis time to just throw to his five-star receivers all day, again, that's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, so it could get ugly. Get ready for it, everybody, because we could be looking at this losing three straight blowouts by the time this game is over. I hope not, you know. I hope CU proves me wrong here, but that's kind of my feeling as it stands right now.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, if we don't want to be a blow, obviously it depends on whether or not Montez and Jay Johnson can kind of get back on track, you know?
Yep.
And
yep.
I guess it's another one of those, well, you got to show me you can do it kind of situations, because right now Montez is not all there and Jay Johnson has not shown that he can really call plays in the red zone. And that's going to have to happen, because you can't just expect your offense to score from 20 plus yards out every time. It just doesn't happen like that.
No, definitely not. They've got to figure it out, but they've got to figure it out at some point this year, because it's so frustrating, because this is the same team. It's like you said earlier, it's the same team that beat ASU, putting up more than 30 points. It's the same team that put up more than 30 on Nebraska in like a quarter and a half. And you know, it's the same team that put up a 50 burger on CSU. Like they know how to score. And yes, all those teams, actually ASU is a strong team, generally strong defense, but like they can do that. They're capable of doing that. They just have to, like you said, it's kind of like a prove it game for them. Like a show us that you can get back to what was working. Because yeah, they need to figure out a way. Otherwise, like we said, you know, we're looking at three win season or something going forward. So, This is the start. This is the start, you know? This is where it starts. You just stop it right now. You look good playing USC at home. Give people something to be happy about.
Yeah, I mean, it would be amazing if they could somehow pull off an upset on this, and then that would give you wins over Nebraska and USC and Arizona State and Arizona. So, I mean, it'd be kind of two monkeys off your back, because I don't think the Buffs had ever won in Arizona, right. And then they've never beaten USC, so that'd be a cool one, but I don't think that that's quite likely. I just, like you said, I kind of just wanted to make, I want them to be competitive. I want it to be a competitive game, and I don't want to get blown out like they have the past couple.
Right. Show some heart, you know? Show me some fight. At least let me, like, I feel like all of us Buffs fans, you know, we haven't been proud after the last two games. Mm-hmm. Like, give us something to be proud of, you know? I don't want to be embarrassed anymore. I don't want to have to, like, take my CU jacket off before I go outside anymore. Because the last 2 weeks, it's been embarrassing, man.
Yeah, when I was out in California, actually, this past weekend for vacation, and I was wearing my CU sweatshirt onto the plane coming back home, and someone just kind of looked at me, shook his head, and he goes, "Man, that was a brutal game, huh?" And
yeah,
it's like, yeah, it was. Sorry, I don't want to talk about it. So
more like a brutal decade.
Yeah, it really has been. I mean, 2016 definitely was an anomaly at this point. Right. And there's no way around it. And sometimes it feels, honestly, like as CU fans and as a program, we're just kind of cursed.
I know.
Dan Hawkins just shake that, put something on us, and it will never come away. But
yeah,
just show some fight, and that's all we can really ask for.
Yep, that's what I'm looking for right now.
So, do you even want to do predictions for the game, or should we just let that one slide for this week?
Well, my prediction is 35-6. So, yeah, that's what I'm gonna say. I just look, Buffs, please prove me wrong. But right now, I just don't even see us scoring a touchdown. You know, so I hope they get it figured out. I hope they do. I hope they come out firing. But that's what I have down, 35-6, some obscure blowout number that it was hard for me to figure out. But
I have 35-14. Yeah. I actually did have 35-14, yeah. But the 14 is not two touchdowns. I've got us kicking two field goals, missing one, and then in garbage time we score, go for two to make it look somewhat more respectable.
Yeah, sure. All right. I guess that's how that could happen. I don't know. Look, I just want come out there, maybe, you know, go for it on fourth and short instead of settling for a long field goal. Or, like, if you get in the red zone, just play four downs. Like, I just want to see some touchdowns, man. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, that would be great to see, a couple touchdowns. We haven't seen one in 2 weeks. Well, I mean, I guess we saw one last week, but it didn't really matter. We haven't seen any meaningful touchdowns in the past couple weeks, so
Let's
see some meaningful touchdowns that actually can put us in the game.
Yeah.
So let's move on from that and get to bets of the week. Chase, as always, I'll let you take it away first.
Okie dokie. My bets of the week this week, first one is Penn State -5.5 at Michigan State. To be completely honest, I don't know why this line is as small as it is. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I feel like Penn State is kind of showing that they're an elite team, and I think Michigan State has shown that they're not at all. So that's my reasoning for that one. ASU -3 at UCLA. Also, I think UCLA is one of those programs that gets the benefit of the doubt too much. They definitely blew out Stanford, but anyone watching that game knows that that wasn't a good Stanford team that they beat. So I think they're just getting a bump here. I think ASU is getting knocked down a little bit after only getting 3 points against Utah. But, you know, I think Jaden Daniels is going to see that UCLA defense and going to feel comfortable again. So I think ASU covers that 3 points very easily. And then my last one is Ohio State -14 versus Wisconsin. So that's a lot of points to take away against a team that was in the top 10 just last week. But, you know, Wisconsin, I think Ohio State, it's really more about Ohio State than it is about Wisconsin. Yes, Wisconsin lost last week to an unranked Illinois team, but I think Ohio State really is just that good. I think they've shown up to this point, they're kind of in that upper tier that's just way better than everyone else, with, you know, Alabama, Clemson, maybe LSU, but I just think Ohio State's a more well-rounded team. So they're looking really good. I think they'll win the blowout. It's at home for them. So, those are my three.
Yeah. Wisconsin, I think, just kind of showed they don't have the offense with that. I mean, if you can somehow slow down Jonathan Taylor, they can't really do much else.
That's what I was going to say.
And that's what Illinois somehow managed to do. So, I'll be taking Ohio State with that one as well. My three for the week were Oregon -14 against Washington State. Again, we made Washington State's defense look like they were dominant, but really that was just Montez and company being inept. And I mean, Oregon is a way better team than us and a way better team than Washington State. They're going to win by more than 14. I'm not at all worried about that spread. I'll probably be eating my words just because it's the Pac-12, but you know, Oregon's defense is really solid, and they're going to be able to put up points against the Washington State defense. That's, aside from the CU game, a terrible defense. So -14 for Oregon. I'm taking Texas -2 against TCU. Texas had a close one against Kansas, so I think that's kind of what's influencing the spread right here. But I think that was just kind of, you know, Kansas playing above their talent level and sticking with the team they shouldn't have. I think there's, I didn't watch it or anything, but I'm assuming that's kind of what happened. I don't think Kansas, if they played that game 10 times, would stay within 2 points all 10 times. So I'm going to stick with Texas minus two. And then the last one, Notre Dame plus 2.5. It's at Michigan, but Jim Harbaugh is some terrible, like 1-11 against top 10 teams. Right, and right. He seems to kind of crack under those big situations. So I think that Notre Dame will be able to come in and actually win the game straight up. And they're just, they're basically calling it a pick 'em with the 2.5 when it's in Michigan. So I'm going to take Notre Dame to win that one straight up just because Michigan, they're starting to show signs of life on offense, but I still don't think it's quite there yet. So Notre Dame plus 2.5, and that'll do it for my three. And for tweet of the week, Chase, I think you've got some audio for us.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll take a listen to this guy right here. Let's see.
Gotta take the sack.
Yes. Yeah, because if you run forward, you're going to be really embarrassed. There's a lot of lines to get right there. We're using that.
So that was audio of Mr. Joe Burrow, LSU quarterback, getting essentially pantsed mid-game. That is our tweet of the week this week. I know it's a video, so it's a little bit harder to track on here, but it was a quarterback getting pantsed pretty much right in the middle of the game, taking a sack so that he didn't just go full out naked in the middle of a in the middle of a game for LSU with like 100,000 fans at the stadium.
And that was, if you guys do want to go watch it, that was tweeted by Will Compton @_WillCompton. And he said legendary day for college football. So go check that tweet out if you want to see it. It was pretty hilarious. And you could tell the announcers were trying to hold it in.
Yeah.
So, I think that'll do it for this week. Hopefully we have something a little bit more upbeat to talk about coming into next week. But thank you for listening. And as always, if you want to send anything in, just send it to shouldertoshoulderpod@gmail.com.
Yep. And, you know, subscribe to the pod, leave some 5-star ratings, leave some reviews, some comments. We always love to see it. Thanks for listening, and Sco Buffs.
Sco Buffs.